Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on ESPN Radio. I don't do a radio show anymore, Gabe. Thanks for listening to the podcast. How about that? Does that work?
That does work. That does work.
You know me, I'm so bad at breaking habits and then, you know, all that stuff. Anyway, we here back, did a vacation. A lot of free agency stuff happened on that vacation. We'll talk about that on this episode of The Right Time. Also, the U.S. Women's National Team winning the World Cup. But first, you know, I kind of feel like it would have been more fitting if Kawhi Leonard, you know, you remember when he got hurt in San Antonio, you know, he missed in the playoffs, you know, he got hurt against the Warriors, then he missed the next year. It kind of would have been more appropriate if he had suffered that injury like at the end of this postseason. Because then what he could do is he could limp out of the arena, and then when he got halfway down the block, somebody could be sitting around looking at a bulletin board, figuring everything out, and then next thing you know, Kawhi Leonard started walking straight and break out that gold lighter, and you realize when he jumped in that car with Paul George in the front seat, he ain't Kawhi Leonard, he Kawhi's a so-say. Did he not Kaiser Sose the whole game? Am I crazy in saying that he Kaiser Sose the whole game? Now, I don't even necessarily think the dude is like super ruthless like the Kaiser Sose character was. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he gonna kill your whole family and then leave one person alive to go tell everybody what they done seen. I don't think he's that version of Kaiser Sose. Maybe he's the verbal Kent turned into Kaiser Sose, because apparently y'all figure, because that dude don't be talking, that he wasn't capable of like making his own moves and pulling everything off. Dude had an uncle that was working with him. Everybody had all the shade for Uncle Dennis. They ain't know nothing about Uncle Dennis. I ain't know a damn thing about Uncle Dennis. I probably got a couple Uncle Dennis jokes off myself, but I reckon I ain't know that dude. I couldn't really put nothing past these cats because I didn't really know anything about them. I've been living too long to think that just because you don't talk to us, it doesn't mean, that you don't talk to anybody or anything like that, or you ain't got anything going for you. But it seems that we all greatly underestimated Kawhi Leonard and what he was capable of. I feel like we underestimated the fact that he could carry a team to an NBA championship. And then little did we know that apparently Kawhi Leonard is the best general manager and the best agent in the NBA. Yes. Yes. Now let me tell you how this played out for me. I went on vacation. I was hanging out in Amsterdam. Now that's put you 6 hours ahead, right? 6 hours ahead. So I got up, I got in the shower. I think this is the day I was leaving, right? Yeah, it was the day I was leaving. So I get up, I get in the shower, I get out. My homeboy is like, yo, Kawhi Leonard's going to the Clippers and Paul George is coming with him. And I say, what? Like, that doesn't seem to make any sense to me. Like, the Clippers part, okay, but what do you mean Paul George is going there? Like, I feel like somebody would have told us that Paul George is going there. We would have heard some whispers about that, right? Nah, man. Apparently Kawhi Leonard got on the phone and was calling dudes to see if they wanted to come and play with him on the Clippers. He called Kevin Durant. He's like, hey, KD, you want to come play with me? And Kevin Durant was like, nah, he wanted to go to Brooklyn. Okay, cool. Then Kawhi Leonard called Jimmy Butler and was like, yo, you want to come down here and do this? And Jimmy Butler wasn't really trying to do it for whatever reason. Okay, cool. He hit Paul George and Paul George is like, oh, tell me more. Is that right? We'll go from there. Now, do I think it's a coincidence that he called the dude who was like, nah, I'm going to New York, and he said no? And then he called the dude that was kind of like, nah, I'm going to Miami, and then he said no? But then he called the dude in Oklahoma City, and he was like, I'm all ears. What you got in mind, buddy? And he basically laid, I don't feel like, as much as, you know, Paul George says Kawhi made a hell of a recruiting pitch, I don't feel like it really necessarily took that much of a recruiting pitch in order to make this happen. Like, I know that Paul George likes Russell Westbrook, but think about this for a second, man. That dude's sitting over there in Oklahoma City, minding his own business, and he gets a phone call from somebody. It doesn't matter who it is, right? He gets a phone call from somebody, and the somebody on the other side says, hey, man, how'd you like to live in a cooler city, a city that is closer to where you are from, and you will be on a better team? How's that sound to you? I mean, who does that not sound great to? I got all the people that's out here listening right now. Like, people acting like Kawhi Leonard called Paul George, and Paul George, like, walked away from playing from, like, the two-time defending champions and made this move. That ain't what he did. Kawhi Leonard went and found a distressed asset. And I was like, hey, man, why don't you come over here? Okay, cool. He's like, cool, but you got to go holler at your boss and make this happen. And so Paul George goes over and he hollers at his boss and he hollers at Presti. Now to me, Presti is like the super duper real power player in this one because Presti could have shut this whole thing down. Instead, Presti was like, nope, how about I extract every bit of surplus possible? So from 2020 to 2026, after all these different moves that Presti has made, 5 out of those 6 years, there is a possibility that Oklahoma City will have multiple first round picks. Now, you want to talk about who the gangster is. It's the dude who was probably out here like, yo, let's figure out how to make this roster better. They got this luxury tax thing, but we're going to, you know, do what I can. And then he gets this phone call and was like, cool, we're starting over right now. Like on the drop of a dime, this cat was like, yo, we love everything we had going here, but it is a wrap. It is over and it is time for us to move on. Because the second that you make the call that you're going to get Paul George out of there, you've also made the decision that you're getting Russell Westbrook out of there. There's kind of no way around it. At that point, once you made that call, you also made the call. Now we're going to see what we can do about Russell Westbrook. That's a gangster move, right? Like, this is the most popular player in the history of our franchise. This city loves him, loves him, loves him. But he got to go, too. Everybody got to go. And it looked like everybody going to go. Gabe, you see that they traded Jeremy Grant for a first round pick?
They're clearing the decks there.
Yeah. And you know what? Sometimes that's just what you got to do. And that's the situation that Oklahoma City wound up in. And I give them the credit, right? Like, they made the trade to get Paul George. And when they made the trade to get him, they're like, look, we got our two frontline guys, and we going to make our play to see what we can do. And then they realized what they had wasn't good enough, right? All right. Game changed around us. Not good enough. Guess we're going to have to figure this thing out. And so that, like, to me, Presti was the guy that held the power. I just applaud Kawhi for having the vision and ambition to think about this in this way. I also raise the question, and you tell me if I'm wrong here, shouldn't the Clippers have been coming up with this idea on their own?
What I wonder about this is, in the aftermath, people were wondering, you know, have there been whispers about Paul George being unhappy since he signed his new deal? And I haven't heard anything that would support that. So it makes me think that Kawhi's operating off of this inside knowledge that players can only have with one another, where they can text each other and be like, yo, you really happy there? You trying to go back to LA or what? That a GM couldn't.
Here's my question. Why are we assuming that to leave he had to be unhappy?
That's a fair point.
Right. That's where I'm kind of like, I deviate from a lot of people on this. Just because he left doesn't mean that he was necessarily unhappy where he was. He just got a better offer.
Interested in leaving.
But I don't even know, like, I don't know why he had to be interested in leaving in the first place. Right? Like, people all the time have jobs and somebody comes up to them and was like, hey, how about this better job? And you're like, yo, I wasn't even thinking about leaving until this dude walked up to me and offered me this. And then you go with it. So, like, maybe it is possible that Paul George didn't like what he had going in Oklahoma City. Maybe he was trying to figure out some way to get out of there. I don't know. I'm just saying that's not, like, necessarily the case. That it just seems to me that Kawhi Leonard walked up with something that was like, hey, if you can talk to your man and he'll let you go, then there's something bomb that's going on here. Here's another question that I have about the way that this played out. Let's say that Sam Presti couldn't make it happen. Right? Like, let's say, or that the Clippers couldn't make it happen, that they could not come up with the trade that was necessary to get Paul George. Is it possible that this would have gone down as one of those things that we found out months and years later was a behind the scenes sort of thing, right? Like, would we have found out about this possibility at all had the Clippers and the Thunder not made a move? Like, there is an alternate universe where Paul George stays with the Thunder and he plays and we have no idea that this ever happened. You know, because there are all kinds of trade talks that happen that don't necessarily go all the way through, and we just don't find out about them. You know, like, they're like, this is the way that these things can often play. And so I don't know what exactly it was. I just look at Kawhi being like, look, I'm going to try this one guy. Okay, that's not going to work. Cool. I'm going to try this other guy. All right, cool. That's not going to work. I'm going to try the dude that's actually under contract. And you see what I can pull off there. Who, by the way, I think for his grand, if there is a grand vision, Paul George is a pretty good call for your number two. And you know why Paul George is a good call for your number two? Because Paul George is a number two. I think if we learned anything from the time with him in Oklahoma City, he's a number two. Like, he was the better player last year than Russell Westbrook, definitely. But Russell Westbrook's number one over there. That's just how it goes. Paul George is a great number two and has no problem, apparently, with sliding over into that number two sort of role. And I think if you're going to play with Kawhi Leonard, you kind of need to be in that number two place. Because, I mean, I don't know how much you watched of him in Toronto, but that dude holds the ball. Now, they also have the possibility with Patrick Beverley up top and Paul George and Kawhi Leonard on the wings. That can be a monstrous defensive team.
Did you see the video that was doing the rounds on social of Paul George guarding Kawhi last year?
Yes, I did. Kawhi made that face at him.
Yeah, and I was like, for a guy who is such a defensive stalwart as Kawhi is and how much he values that in his team, for him to say, all right, I'm going to survey the league and look at who's like gettable, I want that guy.
Yeah.
I want that guy, the guy who could stop me, and now I'm going to have him on my team with Patrick Beverley. Goddamn.
Yeah, no, they're going to play some mean defense. I mean, there's still questions about this team, but they're going to play some monstrous, monstrous defense. And then, Gabe, there are your Lakers. I actually feel better about the team they got than everybody else seems to.
I felt like you were doing me a little bit of a favor when you were talking about how much better the Lakers look out of this than potentially the Clippers.
Well, I don't know if they look better necessarily, right? But I do think that their two best players are better than the Clippers' two best players. Out of those four guys, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, and LeBron James, in some order, are the three best out of those four. We would agree. Drop between those guys and Paul George is not insignificant, right? Like, not that Paul George is a bad player, but Paul George is in a different tier than those dudes are. Like, Anthony Davis might be the best player in the NBA. Like, I mean, you can make an argument for that. That this dude averaged, like, I think the last time we got like a real Anthony Davis season, the dude averaged like 28, 12, 2.5 blocks. He can play defense on the perimeter. He is the best shot blocker in the league. I mean, they didn't make a lot of dudes like this. And he dragged that New Orleans team to the second round of the playoffs that year. Like, this is, I mean, I think that people lose sight from time to time of how cold he is. And go look at what he did after they put him on that, the farce that they ran out for the rest of the, you know, at the end of the season there. Go look at the numbers he was putting up when he played, man. That dude is a monster. Is he a better player than Kawhi Leonard? It is entirely possible that he's a better player than Kawhi Leonard. He's a better player than LeBron James? Totally possible he's a better player than LeBron James. Like, out of these guys that we named, you can make an argument that he's the best one. There's no argument around the fact that Paul George is number four. So, like, if you're looking at that part of it, okay. The Lakers have brought in some guys. It's going to be interesting to see how it goes. Like, with Danny Green, the thing about Danny Green is Danny Green is not young. Like, that's one of them cats. I guess it's because he's still out here wearing them young boy haircuts. But, I mean, that dude left college 10 years ago. So, like, I mean, we're going to see how this progresses. But if Danny Green plays at reasonably close to the level we've seen him play the last couple of years, but better than we saw him play in the NBA Finals, then that's a dude that can make threes for you and plays good defense. JaVale McGee is what he is, right? Like, you're not expecting JaVale McGee to be out here looking like Hakeem Olajuwon, but he can provide something for you as just a big man that can run and can protect the rim a bit. Okay, you're not doing so bad there. If Avery Bradley can stay healthy, that's a dude that can shoot threes, and I have not watched a lot of Avery Bradley lately, so you're feel free to fill this in as it is, but he plays a little bit of defense. There was a point where he played a lot of defense, but the question, of course, with him is he actually going to be able to stay healthy? DeMarcus Cousins, I wouldn't even be surprised if DeMarcus Cousins isn't on the team by the end of the year. Like, I don't even think about signing him as a thing. I think you bring Rondo in to go work with the children, right? That seems to be his calling now. LeBron has announced that he's going to be the point guard on this team, which tells me they're basically like, yo, we can't start Rondo at point guard. I don't think LeBron is ultimately going to be the point guard of this team. That's just kind of impossible. I don't think that workload in year 17 is what you want. And I know the last time they were like, we're going to make LeBron the point guard, that was like his rookie year. That didn't last very long. It sounds like a grand idea for right now, but it's probably not going to be that the whole time. Okay, cool. But this isn't a bad team. I don't think it's a bad team at all. I think that the way that people are looking at the Clippers is that they won 48 games last year. They won two games against the Warriors when the Warriors had Kevin Durant. Therefore, we're switching Gallo out And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, we're getting those two dudes out and we're replacing them with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Yeah, that's a really, really, really good team. There's no question about the fact that that's a really, really, really good team. That ain't no 70-win team or anything like that. Like, that's not the new Warriors. And one question I do have about that team, and I think this is going to matter, who's supposed to get shots for anybody else? Like, there's a possibility that the best playmaker that the Clippers are going to have is Paul George. Because Kawhi Leonard, like, he got better at it, but he's not a playmaker. That is, if you could argue there's a weakness in his game, it's that. He's not that dude. That's not really what Patrick Beverley is here to bring you. That's not what Lou Williams is here to bring you. Like, who's out here helping to get some easy shots for people? I'll be curious to see what they scheme up offensively, what Doc comes up with, because otherwise this does look like it's going to be a real every man for himself sort of scenario. And we know the limitations of an every man for himself sort of scenario. And see, that's one thing that the Lakers have going for them here is, say what you want about LeBron, but LeBron going to get shots for you. Like, if you got a shot that you can make, LeBron's going to be the dude to figure out ways for you to get that shot as easily as you can get that shot. You know? But this is wide open. This is as wide open as the NBA has been without the league being mediocre. Like, this is going to be a lot, man. I am looking forward to it, Gabe. You getting your league pass money ready?
Oh, yeah. You know I'm on it.
Oh, man. Me and my boy were talking about this. Like, this is going to be a bananas year for the league pass. But now, you know, let's get that. Let's start talking about that. Play that music we play at the in between. Like, I was on vacation, so I didn't have a chance to talk about, like, for example, the Nets playing now with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving on that squad. Like, so much happened. Jimmy Butler went to Miami. That happened. Al Horford went to Philadelphia. That happened. Mike Conley got traded to the Utah Jazz. That happened. Gabe, I'm really just like going through the map in my mind, right? It's like that's how much stuff happened. The Pelicans somehow possibly going to be better than they would have been last year with Anthony Davis. That happened. Indiana, didn't they do some stuff?
Yeah, they got Malcolm Brogdon.
That's right. Milwaukee let Malcolm Brogdon go. Didn't what? Bojan Marjanovic, he went to Utah, right?
He went to Utah, correct.
All right, let me see who else we got here. I know people making these moves. You know, Kemba Walker went to Boston. I feel like we talked about that already. I just mentioned Al Horford making his move. Dude, this is just a lot. When the NBA said they wanted to create a greater level of parity, I was not one of those people who thought that was a big deal. I thought that they were overstating the importance of parity. Now, one thing I didn't give enough credence to when I said that before was that the small market teams are a little bit more dependent on, like, basically, they need a good team to sell tickets, and if they don't sell tickets, they ain't really making money like that. I didn't give enough credence to that. But the other part that I didn't give enough credence to is there are just so many more good players in the NBA now. Like, greatness abounds in the NBA. There's so many good dudes. So when people talk about this now, the AAU stuff and da-da-da and all this, and they're like, yeah, you know, back in my day, guys didn't team up. You didn't have to team up like that back in the day because it just wasn't as many good dudes. So think about this. Russell Westbrook being out of there in Oklahoma City, it's looking like. There's a possibility that the Miami Heat might make a trade for Russell Westbrook. And by the way, bless the hearts of all their teammates if they make that trade, because them dudes go hard. Like Pat Riley will be so happy to have those dudes on their team. They might not win any games, but they're going to play hard as hell. Anyway, Russell Westbrook and Jimmy Butler on a team. I mean, Gabe, they'll probably make the playoffs, right?
Based on talent alone, right?
Right, but think about the fact that I'm talking about. And look, there's still questions about Russ and the decline and everything, but the fact that I look at those two dudes, and I'm like, yeah, well, y'all can make the playoffs. Like, I don't even consider them as a, like, contender in the Eastern Conference just because you tell me that you got those two guys. Like, that's how loaded the league is right now. James Harden and Chris Paul over there on the same team. It might not be enough. Like, I mean, this is bananas, what we got all over the place. And so what's changed up is you kind of got to team up with dudes because there's so many dudes. Like, if you think you're going to be the one dude that's going to come out here and make this happen, nah, man, that's not going to work. Like, what I want to see over the course of the next year and change is in Milwaukee, they let Malcolm Brogdon go. And I don't think I would have wanted to pay Malcolm Brogdon $21 million a year either. So I don't knock them on this necessarily. But let's say it gets to that postseason again and Giannis is looking around like, yo, man, we ain't got enough dudes. You think his attitude might change just a little bit about this? Because just about everybody gets into the league with this plan that I can do it myself. And then they look around and they're like, nah, man, I need to get some homies. Like Kevin Garnett. I don't even know if he thought he could do it himself, but he tried. And he looked around and was like, yo, what am I doing? He's like, I'm about to be John Henry. My black heart's going to explode all over the place. And he's like, no, I ain't doing that, right? He went and got on some homies. He went to Boston to do it. He was like, yeah, man, I'll go if you go. And then they went. But cats ain't really trying to wind up in these situations where they play for perennial losers. Wait, in the name of pride? What are you, high? Not doing that anymore. But you kind of got to go. You got to get you up. You either got to get you a backup or you got to get you a leader. Or you got to get you a coach. You got to get you something if you go win in the league right now, because there are so many good players, right? Like, I'm going to go through the league just up and down the list right now. And just teams that have like at least two players that make you be like, oh, okay, that's what's up, right? Standings overall. There we go. All right, so Milwaukee, right? Giannis and Chris Middleton. That's a pretty damn good one, too. We would agree, right?
I'd agree.
Or at the very least, it looked like that on the 1st and the 15th. The Raptors, by the way, surprisingly, are now not one of those teams because they just lost Kawhi Leonard. Isn't that crazy? The Warriors, I mean, you're still talking about Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and, I mean, they'll get Klay Thompson back at some point, but Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and D'Angelo Russell. Oh, forgot about that one. The Nuggets, Jokic, what's my man's name, Jamal Murray? Like, those dudes are cold. Portland, we know that, right? McCollum, Lillard, and then if Nurkic is healthy, you talking about him.
What do you think about them getting Whiteside, though?
That dude is bad news.
Whiteside seems to be really good friends with Lillard.
Let's see how cool they are after they play together. That's all I'm saying. Like, let's see how cool they are after they play together. The Rockets, we talked about those, who they got. The Sixers, again, the Sixers now have Al Horford, Tobias Harris, Joel Embiid, and Ben Simmons. And I don't think that team can win a championship because that's how loaded the NBA is right now. Utah, who they trying out here? Gobert, Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell. I mean, I don't love Donovan Mitchell as much as everybody else does, but yo, that's their third best player.
What about your man, Joe Ingles?
Oh, yeah, Joe Ingles, but yeah, he a dude, right? But he good to have. He talk that smack, that's good. Boston still has Kemba Walker, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward. Right, that team ain't winning no championship because that's how loaded this league is right now. I mean, and I'm just reading really down the list of teams. Dallas next year, once they get Porzingis back out there, they're going to have Porzingis and Doncic? Okay, we'll watch. I'm down to check that out. Like, the league is nuts. It's absolutely nuts. And so everybody's making these moves, and I'm just telling y'all, enjoy it, man, because there's going to be a whole lot of people that's mad they can't win no championship, but what you thought used to be able to make you a championship contender just isn't anymore. And so these cats are going to have to assemble, and it seems that they trust each other more than they trust these general managers. Again, I asked this question about the Kawhi Leonard move. Why was Kawhi Leonard walking in the door with that plan instead of the Clippers walking in the door with that plan? Right? Why were the Clippers not saying, hey, Kawhi, you are 28 years old. Your time is right now. And so if we get you, we are also going to do what it takes to acquire a second player. Why did Kawhi have to walk in and be like, all right, y'all need a second player, and I already called Paul George, and he say he down to come. Like, a team should have come up with that idea. The Clippers should have looked around up and down at that roster and realized, yo, that's the only way we really going to be able to pull this off. Like, this should have been them. I seen Jerry West get all the credit. I mean, the Clippers did the whole year sell job on Kawhi. Like, Gabe, you read about that, how, like, Lawrence Frank and all these cats are just turning up at all their games?
Yeah, I had somebody posted up on a Clippers polo at every Kawhi game.
Yeah, yeah, like they put in the grind. Like, this to me is, that's Steve Ballmer right there. Like, that's a dude who is operating on this, like, I led the industry leader in industry, basically, right? Like, nah, I'm playing this game totally different. We gonna make this happen. We gonna get this. And they went out there and they made it happen. Now, how much of that was necessary? Like, how much did that actually sway Kawhi's decision? I got no idea. I don't think any of us will ever have any idea, because the more and more I look at these things, the free agency in the NBA, Are these cats being convinced to do things? Are these things, these cats just doing what they want? Like, do you think anybody convinced LeBron James to come play for the Lakers? Like, as much as I say you got to give it to Magic that he ultimately delivered on LeBron James, but do you think that, like, do you think the Cavs convinced LeBron to come back when he returned? I don't. I think Miami, a little bit in some way, convinced LeBron to come. But I feel like these dudes are largely making these decisions on their own. And so, yeah, maybe the Clippers did this and made that happen. No, not really. Kawhi was just like, no, I'm showing up. Now get me somebody better. Like, if this were phrased differently, and Kawhi didn't say, I want you to get Paul George, and Paul George says he's down. If Kawhi Leonard went to the Clippers and said, yo, I would sign with y'all, but we need somebody else. And then they went and got somebody else. Would that be any different than what this situation is? Not really. So I don't understand why it is that the Clippers weren't the ones to be like, don't worry, we working on it. That's just me.
Makes it so that Kawhi gets to choose who they go after as opposed to the Clippers going after him.
Yeah, except why would Kawhi need to be the one to choose?
Well, maybe he wants to be the one to choose, right?
Right, but right, maybe he wants to, but I'm saying if I'm the Clippers, like this Paul George idea that Kawhi had, I feel like is really something anybody could have come up with. Like, somebody could have gone and engaged Sam Presti and been like, look, you need to be honest with yourself about what you got going here, right? Like, y'all ain't about to win nothing with this team, and you know y'all ain't about to win nothing with this team, so let's talk about Paul George. Like, even though Paul George had all these years left on his contract, that doesn't mean he can't be traded. We saw Blake Griffin get traded by the Clippers with all those years on his contract. So again, why is Kawhi Leonard the one who had to come up with this idea to do it? I don't think that this was something that no one could have come up with but Kawhi Leonard. So maybe he wanted to make the choice and he did try to go around and make those calls. But I'm saying that when he walked into his recruiting meeting or whatever he talked about with the Clippers, I don't see why the Clippers didn't have it on the table. Oh, and we're about to go get somebody. And maybe they did say that to him, right? I haven't seen that written anywhere. I was on vacation last week, so I could have this wrong. But I'm saying that the Clippers should have been the ones to come up with this in the first place. Like, if I'm Kawhi, I'm kind of like, yo, I got to do everything around here. Like, as much as everybody talk about wanting to have that power, you don't feel like doing all that stuff. What you ultimately want is for them to come run stuff by you. You don't want to have to do it your damn self. That's preposterous. There ain't good about that. Like, for example, okay, we do this podcast, right? You say what you want about me. I don't want to do your job. I have no interest in doing your job. I want you to do the job. When it's coming up with these new ideas for the show and coming up with the book club and stuff, that's you, baby. I don't need that kind of power. You got this. You know why? Because that's your job. No. You may want the power, but you don't want the job. And if I'm Kawhi, I'm looking around. I'm coming in after this and being like, yo, just so y'all know, y'all got to do, you know, next trade's on you. I gave you a freebie. I ought to charge y'all for this. You should charge them for that, by the way. You really should. But anyway, next year's free agency ain't going to be so wild. But you know who's coming up in 2021?
Giannis.
Giannis.
Word is that Masai and the Raptors have their eye on Giannis already.
That is the word. And can we be honest? People kind honest. Of assuming.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, this is based on some assuming. You know? They think that it's about to be the Niger connection. You understand what I'm saying? Like, they think that that's what this is. And who knows? Maybe that is what it is. But I don't even know if they people kick it together in Nigeria. You know what I mean? Because don't everybody kick it together. I don't even know if they people kick it together like that. But that's the thought. I will say this, though. Giannis fits the profile of who would find Toronto to be attractive as a free agent. Specifically, somebody who's not from the United States. And I imagine after you've been living in, no disrespect, Milwaukee, but Toronto is a little bit more cracking. And I imagine if you came from Greece and you've been kicking it over here in Milwaukee and you loved it, but Toronto, I think Toronto will probably be more your speed. It is possible. And they're going to be able to clear the deck at the end of this year, right?
Oh, yeah. All those expirings.
Yeah. Like Lowry, Ibaka, and Gasol, they're going to get them off the books. 2020 is going to be interesting for positioning as it relates to 2021. But let's try our best not to be those people who care more about the personnel moves than the actual basketball, because the actual basketball is going to be crazy. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about the women's national team winning the World Cup. But first, hiring is challenging. But there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. But they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Yo, congratulations to the U.S. Women's National Team. Did you watch that game? Are you into soccer on that level?
I am into soccer on that level, although I was in the air and on an Alaska Airlines flight where they do not have TV during the broadcast of the final.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah, I got back from Europe on Saturday, and I watched the game on Sunday morning, and I have to say, the U.S. Women's National Team is so much better than the Netherlands team. My goodness. Like, it did not take long at all before I was like, oh, wow, there's no question who's going to win this game. I can't, like, when, what year was it? Was it 2011 when the U.S. lost to Japan? And it seemed pretty clear the U.S. team was better, but I wasn't sure. Like, it wasn't like, oh, there's no chance that they could lose this game against Japan. And, of course, ultimately, they did, in fact, lose it. The Netherlands, I was like, ain't enough luck in the world for a big Ernge to come out here and get them a victory. That wasn't going down at all. Like, that was, you know, that happens sometimes, right? Where you get to the final and it's just like an anticlimactic sort of situation. Like, that was not riveting footy to watch because it was just a domination. There was just no question which team happened to be better. The way we treat the U.S. Women's National Team is just a little, I don't know. And this is not at all about them and the quality of their play, because they are obviously a dominant force in their sport. What I find interesting, though, is the energy that we have for the U.S. Women's National Team is some energy that we could have for some of our other national teams that are also very dominant. And I don't quite understand why we don't feel the same way about all of our national teams, particularly the dominant ones. Now, I think that with soccer, there's a couple things that are taking place or that have taken place. One of them, of course, is what appeared to me to be the change in attitudes in this country about soccer following the 1994 World Cup, Gabe. And I'm assuming you don't have much recollection of anything. You were born in 1992, right?
I was born in 91. 91, so I was 3 at this time.
Okay, yeah. So that is, like, to me, that's an inflection point in the way that sport is viewed in this country. Like, once it was here and they put it on television a lot more, and I think that for a lot of people, like, that was a chance to really get into it. And for those people, a chance to really get into, like, the national team and World Cup soccer. Cause they get, you know, you see this happen pretty much everywhere where the World Cup is. The home team all of a sudden plays better than they ever had before.
Yes.
You know, and so it was one of those sorts of situations. But I think from there, interest in soccer grew, and also soccer as a participatory sport, particularly for girls, has grown in that time period. And so I think that creates, especially with the U.S. Women's National Team being so good, that creates a strong audience, because I think that there is a real and important value, more particularly on the women's side than the men's, to display and show this team as, you know, as being visible as a way to encourage girls to participate in the sport more. You know what I mean? Like, I think that, you correct me, I think times have changed certainly, but you tell me if this doesn't make sense or not. It is more likely that a parent might make a boy play soccer. Like, hey, you're going to go play this sport. I think you're going to have more girls playing soccer because they're asking their parents and saying that's what they want to do. Does that make sense?
I think that's fair. And now with Title IX, where for every program, I'm not sure if it's 12 or up or 15 or up. If they have like a men's program for a sport, they've also got to have a program for, yes, a women's sport as well. That's made a huge difference.
But I'm saying, but put it like this. If, I mean, the men's national team is not good, right? but people push their kids to, people are still pushing their boys to play soccer. If the U.S. women's national team wasn't as good, do you think as many people would push or as many girls would push to play soccer if they were not good?
That is a very good question.
Right. Like, and I think that plays into some of the visibility that the women's national team has, is that like there's a lot of different factors that are at play. And then, of course, we get the fact that they are really, really good and have been really, really good for a long time. Like, do you remember when they won in 99?
Yes, I do.
Like, that was a thing, man. But I'm telling you, I had never heard nobody talk about women's soccer one day in my life before the year 1999. Like, that was the flip. Like, at that point, for particular that team, it was like, yo, we have gone out and we have dominated something in the world. And again, that game was in the United States. It was at the Rose Bowl, right? Like, all that drummed up. And so there's always this, like, really strong level of goodwill that's around that team that is also surprisingly healthy. And what I say about it being healthy is when the women's national team loses, it's not the end of the world. Like, when they lost that game to Japan, if the men's national team had been like a consistent performer on the level that the women's national team had been, and then they went and lost the game, like they lost that game to Japan, we wouldn't have been coming out there being like, oh yeah, but good job. That wouldn't have been it, right? It was like, we were much better about the way that we handled it when they lost that than we would be in these other sports, which is, and the reason that stands out to me is that it seems that the place that the women's national team has in like the larger discussion is it's great if they win, but if they don't, we just keep it moving. You know, like we pop in on them when they are good and they make us feel good about being Americans in the place of their dominance. And we will watch them on television as they do that. But we definitely treat them in a way that is not quite like we treat any other American sporting entity. And in some ways, I think that is very, very, very good. Where I find it interesting, though, is the most dominant traveling American sports outfit is our basketball program. Men's and women's basketball. The United States is better at that vis-a-vis the world than anything else. Think about this for a second. You know what it takes for heads to roll on the men's basketball program, where all of a sudden we look up and talk about what a colossal failure everything is? A bronze medal.
Yeah, how about lose a game?
Yes.
And some heads will roll.
Yes. A bronze medal. Seriously, 1988. Bronze medal. And you know why they won a bronze medal in 1988? And you could say the rest of the world caught up to our college players. That's kind of what happened. What really happened was they played against Arvydas Sabonis. Like that's what happened. They ran up against a dude who at that time was probably one of the five best players in the world. He shouldn't have been playing in the damn Olympics, right? But that's what happened, and they lost. Next thing you know, we had to come kill an ant with a sledgehammer. We rolled out there with the dream team. Now, granted, what happened in 04 was not a good thing, right, when they lost that. But they lost that in 04. We had to change the whole thing again. They won a bronze medal. A bronze medal. And it was the most embarrassing thing in the world that they won a bronze medal. It was the most embarrassing thing in 88 that we won a bronze medal. The women's national basketball program in the United States is so damn good, but we don't ever get behind them in the way that we get behind the soccer program. And the reason that I find that to be so weird is that, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Gabe, but isn't basketball more popular in this country?
Yeah, and that was going to be my follow-up to your point about this, is that with soccer in the United States, it's far from the most popular sport. So when you have a dominant team, that's great. But if you lose, the sting isn't as bad because, oh, well, we're not supposed to be the best in the world at it anyways, right? Whereas with basketball, we're supposed to be dominant because the NBA is here. The WNBA is here. We don't have an excuse.
Yeah, I think another thing that happens with soccer is I feel like we want to be part of the world community in that way. Does that make sense?
Oh, 100%. So there's the cheering of like, yeah, we're here too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, like we want to, we like that, that's part of it. I think we want to be in this thing that is cool. It's like, yo, the World Cup is the biggest sporting event in the world. It ain't big if we ain't there. You know what I mean? So, like, maybe that is part of it, but I don't knock anybody for the support they give to the soccer team. I just want people to notice that they don't give this same support to people that represent this country in athletics in a way that is on par with or superior to any other outfit that we have. And there is no really like great explanation as to why it has carried out in that way. Or maybe there is. I just don't understand what it is. And like I admit, I don't watch a lot of soccer, men's or women's. Honestly, the only basketball I really can stomach as a television product at this point is the NBA. Like, I don't like watching college basketball on television, men's or women's. Like, I just don't. The NBA is really the only, like, I could watch those things in person, but the NBA is, like, really the only one that I can, like, stomach to watch on television. But this is what we do well. This is what we do best. And I just hope that everybody who is watching appreciates that, like, those teams are part of your we. Also, and they should also give you the pride that the soccer team happens to give you. And if it doesn't, I just think it's a fair question to ask why. I do. And so I don't want to take anything away from the women who competed, who are a hell of a collection of people, by the way, right? Like, I mean, we're running long on this. So I didn't have a chance to like really get into this. They are a fascinating group of women, and it's dope to not only see them be fascinating, but to see them be comfortable being like, okay, this is what it is. This is how we get down. And they're going to get down in that way. And I love them for that because they are in a position to be free and they are using it. And I congratulate them for taking that opportunity. I absolutely do.
I had one follow up for you before we get out of here on this. Since you were in the Netherlands, you know, you're in Holland and they were playing in the final against the women's national team. What was the feeling like in Holland around the national team and how people felt about it? Were people interested? Were people hyped?
Non-existent as far as I could tell. We went to a bar during the semifinal match the Netherlands had with Sweden. And like it was on, but no, we were the ones paying attention to it.
Man, and so that kind of goes to my next question for you is that what's super interesting is one could say that around the world and especially in Europe, it is more equal for women, or the women have more equal rights in terms of a public policy standpoint. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Than here, right? One would imagine that women's sports in another country like Holland would be propped up more. There would be more interest there. And then you have like the head trainer for the women's national team. She's from the UK. And she was saying that like, oh, in the UK, I didn't get encouragement growing up where we weren't able to play, but that's not something that you would get necessarily here. So I'm wondering if you had any thoughts as to why that may be, or why sentiment may be like that, where, you know, you were over there and people weren't interested necessarily.
That's fascinating that you talk about it in the macro, because like I had chalked up the micro to just being maybe that was just the spot we were in. You know, but I really hadn't given much thought to like what that interest level is on a lot, you know, in that larger place. I don't have a great answer. The thing that's always tricky when talking about women's sports is that traditional notions of femininity run counter to the kind of sports that we're talking about. Right. So this isn't the case with all sports, though. Traditional notions of femininity do not run counter to gymnastics or figure skating, for example. Right. Now, figure skating becomes interesting because traditional notions of masculinity absolutely run counter to figure skating. And you notice that there's typically more interest in women's figure skating than men's figure skating. And I think it's directly tied to that fact. Right. And so anytime we start talking about interest in women's sports and support for it and all of those things, what we're always going to run into is people's concept of what is or is not for women to or not to do. And I don't know quite enough about European culture to know exactly how this stuff runs into that. Does that make sense?
That does make sense.
I don't think I said anything too stupid in this segment, did I? Because I was kind of trying to like intellectualize and think about things in some different ways, but also like not say nothing that was going to have nobody too mad, because I wasn't trying to make nobody mad. I wanted to make people think.
I think so. I mean, there's so much to unpack there.
Yeah.
With this huge women's national team campaign. It was such like a, I mean, just being out and about in California when I went back home and, you know, the Bay Area and being on the plane and all that sort of stuff, I saw a ton of national team gear.
Yeah, but let me tell you too, man, people, especially in this day and age, man, people love a reason to wave that flag. You know what I mean?
Yes, they do.
I mean,
yes,
there's no way around that. And they are a reason to wave that flag. I do think people need to ask themselves, though, when they wave the flag and why. It's fair to ask.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this first story comes from entertainment.
I'm Michael Rothman with Good Morning America Digital. If you haven't heard, some folks on social media voiced their concerns over the weekend with the Little Mermaid's casting of Halle Bailey in the lead role. After seeing certain hashtags like, not my Ariel, the Grownish Stars network Freeform clapped back in the most savage way possible. In a lengthy open letter addressed to the poor unfortunate souls, ouch, Freeform not only addressed the ridiculous racial undertones of the casting criticism, but added some serious sarcasm you could cut with a trident. The post read, spoiler alert, the character of Ariel is a work of fiction. Freeform also addressed Ariel's hair color, the fact that merfolk can be black, can have red hair, and much more. It closed the biting post with, and I quote, so after all this is said and done, and you still cannot get past the idea that choosing the incredible, sensational, highly talented, gorgeous Halle Bailey is anything other than the inspired casting that it is, oh boy, do I have some news for you about you. Wow. Well said.
How many people were really mad?
Judging by social, I feel like there's always the loudest voices in the room get the attention.
And I can't tell who is or isn't a real person and what can very often happen. And I'm when I ask how many people were really mad, I mean that sincerely because I don't even know how you accurately measure this. Because so much of the industry and journalism has been about like harvesting these tweets and then making like posts out of them. And then you go find 5, 15, 20 people, however many it is, send something. And then it seems like critical mass, but you forget about that this is over a sample of millions. And I've certainly seen things that people put on Facebook and stuff about this. So I'm not denying that there were people who were mad about this. I just can never tell how many people are actually mad. Like if that level of anger, whoever those people are, is anything that needs to be, like really honored or respected or to be considered. And then I realized like how much different like 2019 is from back in the day. Cause I saw some posts that somebody put up about it and they showed some Facebook post this woman put up asking about Halle Bailey as the Little Mermaid, and she was like, "Can she even get her hair wet?" And you know, back in the day, black folks would have gotten to tell that joke first. Like, I was a little surprised that a white woman had put that one up. I was like, "Wow, that's a certain level of sophistication about understanding how black people are." Except for the fact that doesn't she have dreads?
I believe she does.
Yeah. Dreads can handle that. That's not the issues with the other stuff. But the dreads can handle that just fine. Come on now. But at a whole different time, there would have been a whole. Tell me I'm lying about this. Tell me you could not imagine a whole comedy routine on Def Jam about the idea of the Little Mermaid being black.
Yes, I could.
Yes.
I could totally imagine that.
Yes. And by the way, for all those people who love to point out all the things that have gotten better over time, there is no way in the world in, say, 1995 that I ever could have imagined that they would have a black person as the Little Mermaid. Like, this is, like, there's something to this being a bit of a shift, and I do believe that there are a lot of people who are really disturbed by these shifts. I just don't think we gotta look at them every time they don't know how to handle something. You know, like, I don't think we have to give them that greater level of acknowledgement every time. They're like, hey, that character is supposed to be white. Okay, well, now the movie's about to come out. Watch it or don't, you know? But we ain't gotta look at them every time they get out here acting up.
Yeah, the sad part about why that could be a joke at a Def Jam comedy thing is that you're joking about it because there's a part of you inside that feels like this isn't something that could happen because of the way that things are.
Yes. Well, you also joke about it because African Americans and our relationship with getting in the water. There's a lot of history that's involved in it, and it goes in a whole lot of different directions. It's not a very, very simple thing. But this is, I mean... I guess, or you know what? And maybe this is my problem here. maybe I just don't want to believe that anybody is that mad over something that stupid, right? Maybe I am making the critical mistake of giving people too much credit. I don't know, but it's really just hard for me to think that people really got that much time to really care about this. And I just don't know how to take a sample of people on the internet and extrapolate from that how many people like actually are mad or care. Like when people talk about the U.S. women's national team, for example, and, you know, the backlash that they received, and granted, I was away, so maybe I missed it, you know, in part, but I was like, is there really a backlash at play here? Because they sure ain't talking about this team on the broadcast like one that inspires some sort of backlash or, you know, got to see both sides type stuff. Like, that's not what I saw. I can just never tell. Because we have to make the media stuff work, we try to balance the bets. I can just never tell how many people are actually that mad. That's all.
Interesting time now where we're going live action on all these Disney movies.
There's
man.
That.
We got Lion King. We got Mulan coming out. We got Little Mermaid. What, you know, yeah. Sleeping Beauty. What's next?
I got to say this, by the way. Now, granted, it's a little different situation with Little Mermaid because they kind of supposed to be people. But if people were mad at the idea of a black woman being the Little Mermaid, shout out to all the people who could handle Donald Glover being Simba. Now, of course, that's supposed to be in Africa, but they ain't never stopped them from putting white people in characters before. Good job. Progress.
All right. The second one is an interesting story. I'm not really sure what category to put it in, but you'll have to hear it.
This is Jordan Culver with USA Today. Police in Texas identified and spoke to a juvenile who was shown in a viral video licking a half-gallon tub of Tin Roof Bluebell ice cream and then putting it back inside a Walmart freezer. The Lufkin Police Department will not release the suspect's name because of anonymity laws for juvenile offenders, and the case is now being transferred over to the Texas Juvenile Justice Department. Here's what we do know. The suspect is from San Antonio and has ties to the Lufkin area through her boyfriend's family. The juvenile suspect was found after Bluebell Creameries instructed all of its division and managers to see if they could identify the store location where the incident took place. A division manager determined the video was shot at a Walmart in Lufkin due to the store's unique merchandising, which matched the video, according to police. Bluebell then contacted the Lufkin Police Department. Lufkin Police told USA Today that tampering with a consumer product is a second-degree felony and carries a punishment range of 2 to 20 years. The department is consulting with the FDA, and federal charges may also be pending. Now, that was said before it was discovered that the suspect was a juvenile. Bluebell says it retrieved the tub of ice cream that was licked by the suspect, but the company removed all half-gallon containers of Tin Roof from the Walmart just as a precaution. The Lufkin Director of Public Safety said he was appalled and disturbed by the video, which, by the time the story on USA Today was published, had been viewed more than 11 million times.
I like to consider myself to be a sympathetic person. Under the jail. Under, I said. Under. You with me?
I'm not with you. What do you mean?
What do you mean you're not with me? Put her under the jail.
Under the jail?
Under the jail.
What do you mean under the jail?
Under. Below it. We'll decide when you get out later.
For licking an ice cream. Did you see the video?
Yes, I did see the video. You say that like I'm tripping. Like you're like, just for licking an ice cream. It wasn't licking an ice cream. You had to acknowledge that that was disgusting, right?
Yes.
No, wildly selfish. Incredibly problematic. How I know she ain't got measles?
That's a fair point.
Right? And how dare you do this to Bluebell that's been through so much already? Like, this is the part that's unfair. You know, I understand this. You know, Bluebell. You know, some people died, right? You remember that?
I don't remember that.
You don't remember that? Okay. So Bluebell is an ice cream made in this little town called Brenham, Texas. And for those of us who are from Texas, it's the only ice cream that exists. Like, all this other stuff is imitation. This is the only ice cream that we got. This is all we know. This is what we about. This is who we are, right? It's a big deal. It's a big, big deal. Anyway, and so basically, they had a little stretch there where people wasn't cleaning up after themselves enough in the factory. This little disease called listeria. So people got it. So people were harmed. Bluebell had to do like a lot of apologizing, clean up a lot of stuff. But from what I can tell, they're back in the game, right? You know, they learned their lesson. They kept it pushing. But now people are holding it against Bluebell that this girl wasn't raised right. You understand what I'm saying? Right? It ain't Bluebell's fault. So the thing that has been called out for being Bluebell's fault is, so Bluebell doesn't put like plastic on top of the ice cream, you know, on the half gallons or any of that. That's not what they do. What they do is they freeze the top on and it serves as the seal. And anybody that's consistently eating Bluebell ice cream knows that first time to get the top off is hard as hell to make that happen. And then after that, it's looser because the seal has been broken. And so people have made the point, which is a fair one, that people wouldn't lick the ice cream if they had like a little plastic thing on it. But I'm not so sure about that. Anyway, this girl thought it would be funny to lick the ice cream and then put it back in there so somebody could buy it, and thought it would be funny to put it on camera. And we need to let people know this stuff isn't funny. And the only way they gonna know it's not funny is if we start making examples out of people. On to the jail.
They got 20 years on her, potentially.
I mean, 20 is a bit excessive.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. 20 is a little excessive. I do understand that it is a severe crime we're talking about here.
I do feel like, I think it's worth a month. 30 days in the county.
That's fair. See, there's a huge difference between 20, 30 days and 20 years.
Yeah, let me tell you this, though. When you just a regular person who thought licking ice cream would be funny, then 30 days is going to feel like 30 years.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. I mean, it'll teach you a lesson to not commit crimes and videotape it for the enjoyment of the social mass.
And not licking other people's ice cream. Just don't do that.
All right, this last story comes from Tech.
My name is Peter Hawley, and I'm a reporter at the Washington Post covering technology. My latest story is about how our bosses evaluate our performance. Over the last few years, we've all become familiar with fitness trackers. I'm talking about the Fitbit or the Apple Watch. These are devices that allow you to track your heart health and your daily movements and performance and fitness level. As it turns out, a team at Dartmouth has taken those same wearables and used them in conjunction with a few other tools to determine something else entirely, whether you're a productive employee. Using sensors, a custom app, and a fitness bracelet, the researchers say they can determine this with about 80% accuracy. Now keep in mind, this technology is brand new and still evolving. There's a few different scenarios, both good and bad. On the one hand, we might be entering a new era of hyper-intelligent virtual assistants. Imagine coming home from work and your virtual assistant points out that your heart rate was elevated for the fourth time this week when you were meeting with a particular boss. Here's some breathing exercises that could help you. In this scenario, employees get nuanced assessments of their daily performance and are able to privately use it to their advantage. Let's say you're struggling to get ahead in your career. Well, now you have data to back up why you deserve that promotion. On the other hand, if corporations get a hold of this technology, now they have data to explain why you don't deserve that promotion. Imagine, for example, if your boss had a spreadsheet showing every time you went to the bathroom and how long it took. It's safe to say most of us don't want our bosses snooping on our bathroom habits or monitoring our vital signs during presentations. We'll have to wait and see how this technology is adopted and by whom, but researchers do appear to agree on one thing. Personalized workplace performance technology is an inevitability.
Hell nah, bro. I ain't with this shit at all. Nah, ain't nothing good coming from this. I mean, that was really cool of MV Peter to try to find a way and be like, yo, this could be great for you to get that raise, man. They ain't never gave nobody a raise because they was right. Hey, boss, I got all this data that says that you should give me a raise. If they cared about that, they'd already gave you the damn raise. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. Have you ever seen the movie Her? With Joaquin Phoenix?
I have not.
It's in the future. He's got this personal computer that's like connected to his like vitals and all that sort of stuff. And it's like, oh, you're stressed out. You should do this or blah, 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 which is like what Peter's talking about. And in the article, it was talking about how that is like something that is like being tested and planned for the future.
This is bad.
Yeah, like except in that movie, basically what happens is Joaquin Phoenix falls in love with the computer. Because the computer's voice is Scarlett Johansson.
Ah.
And they got this little dynamic going throughout the whole movie. But, yeah, potentially for the future there.
This is bad news, guys. I keep trying to tell you that the future is bad news.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. So we're back from you being away, back from me being away. A little 4th of July action. A lot of cookouts happening, fireworks happening, that sort of thing. So we put out for best cookout 4th of July stories, old and new. And we got a couple of good ones. Our first one is from Leon in New York.
Yo, Bo, what's going on, man? It's Leon from New York. So this happened maybe like 2 years ago. I had met a chick at the time, real cute chick, you know, so she invited me to a cookout, and I always got the mindset that if a girl's cute, then that means she got cute friends, so I'm gonna pull up. So I pull up, and Bo, everything was popping, but the food was trash. I had a couple drinks, so me start getting friendly with everybody. I start telling everybody how the food was trash. Long story short, shorty come up to me and pull up like, yo, you talking about how the food is trash? I'm like, yeah, why? What happened? She like, yo, my mom made all this food. Yeah, man. So that's kind of where it went downhill. So any fellas out there, shorty invite you to the barbecue, wherever you going, family bit thing, eat the food. If it's trash, just don't say nothing. Don't be me. Bo, it's a pleasure. Shouts to my man Gabe. Y'all already know.
Who did you think made the food? Even if it wasn't her mama. Like, if she threw the party, she was responsible.
And whoever made that food is most likely going to be at the cookout.
Yo, what do you think they did? Left? Just gave them? Yeah, you did that to yourself, Leon.
Even if it was catered, there's probably some sort
of connection.
Somebody
paid for it.
Yeah, it'll get back to the caterer somehow if you're throwing dirt.
Either way, there's no way to not look ungrateful.
That's good advice, though. Don't talk trash about the people who make your food.
Leon did that, so hopefully you won't have to go through that.
Our next is from Mary in L.A.
Hey, this is Mary from Los Angeles, and I'm the subject of the horrible cookout story. So I'm Filipino, and I finally got invited to a cookout. And it wasn't just any cookout. It was a cookout hosted by the Q's. One minute when I got it to the grill, and I asked if they had any vegan burgers. Because I'm in L.A., okay? Yep, I did that. And the grill guy didn't say anything to me. He barely looked at me. But I did see his hand grip the spatula very, very hard. So I got out there real quick.
Gabe, you know who the Q's are?
I don't.
Google Omega Psi Phi fraternity. Like, do that right now. You may have recognized them at your college. I love this, that she went to a Q party and asked for a vegan burger.
Oh, boy.
Did y'all have Q's at your school? Then the camouflage and the gold boots.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. So that's who she asked about the vegan burger.
Have you ever had a the Beyond Burgers are actually really popular now.
Why would I do that?
Well, you might want to try it just in case.
I'm not about that life.
I had one when I was back home. My dad was grilling up some burgers, and he bought Beyond Burgers for my wife and I, even though my wife and I are not vegetarian.
Just seem like it?
We just seem like vegetarians. Mm-hmm. It can be pescatarian sometimes, or I'll go a little while without having like pork or beef, mm-hmm. and I'll just have fish. But it was actually pretty good. I'm not going to lie.
I'll let somebody know.
I feel for Mary, though. And the guy just didn't even look at her, just squeezed.
Oh,
just
what a perfect setup.
Squeezed the spatula.
What a perfect setup.
This last one is interesting. The guy didn't leave his name.
My favorite 4th of July cookout experience was when I was able to share with my family this thesis that I wrote on Pimp C country rap tunes. There was a live band performance. Everyone cheered, and the food was great. And to have the funk and the gospel combined with UGK style of rap and production performed by a live band, all culminating this research in 2 years, made this holiday a really special one. Love the interview that you did with Bun B. Thank you kindly.
Yo, that's really dope. And I'm glad it worked out dope, because I can't imagine that showed us some cookout and they're like, nah, Johnny about to do a presentation. What? I'm glad you brought it.
Wrote his thesis on it.
Yeah, nah, it's dope. Good to see, man. Good to see. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thanks to our sponsor, ZipRecruiter. By the way, the SB Day auction is upon us again. You want a chance to celebrate J-Lo's 50th birthday with her in Miami? You'll be a star yourself as you take in one of the biggest concerts of the year and get to meet the triple threat superstar herself in person. Head to ebay.com/ESPN for details. All proceeds benefit the V Foundation for Cancer Research. In the fight against cancer, sponsor we'll never give up. Also, check out the Woj Pod this week. He's in Vegas for Summer League and head on new Jazz point guard Mike Conley, as well as their GM Justin Zanuck. Remember, subscribe to the Right Time and the Woj Podcast. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, we appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. Yelling, give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. Oh, and I almost forgot. Thanks to our If You Haven't Heard contributors, Michael Rothman at ABC. Check out his story on the casting of The Little Mermaid at abcnews.com. Thank you to Jordan Culver of News Now at USA Today. Check out his story on that cretin that licked the bluebell at usatoday.com. And MV Peter Holly making his triumphant return to the Right Time. Check out his story on performance tracking at your job and why it's inevitable at WashingtonPost.com. All right. Talk to you guys in a couple days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.